Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm Anastasia, and here with me today is Sarah Wilson, founder of the I Quit Sugar movement. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you for having me.
So you're here because of your new book, which is very different to the I Quit Sugar books. Do you want to tell us a bit about it?
In some ways, it's almost like Star Wars. It's the book that came before it all, that came later.
Yeah.
It tells the story behind why I first got unwell and then found myself having to quit sugar as one of many experiments to improve my health. It came about the first time when I got unwell. I moved to Byron Bay and lived in an army shed in the forest, and I went up there to write this book about anxiety, and I wasn't quite sure where it was going to head, but instead I gave up on that. I got 60,000 words in and actually threw it away, threw the box of stuff away, and instead wrote I Quit Sugar. So there's a kind of a nice circular kind of pattern to it all. But this one was one that I just sort of have felt almost a responsibility to write it. And I know that sounds weird, but I've been very fortunate enough to get a bit of a platform. You know, people read my books. You know, I'm very, very lucky. Yeah. And I'm also a journalist who's had access to some really big voices, such as the Dalai Lama, Oprah Winfrey's life coach, whole range of different incredible minds. And I've been able to ask them questions about mindfulness, anxiety, different ways to understand life, I suppose. So I felt that, and I've lived with anxiety from as long as I can remember, really. From 6 or 7, I remember being anxious, and I've suffered from a number of disorders, and I put the quote-unquote, you know, marks around the word disorder. So I think the whole kind of combination of things really led me to the fact that I felt that, you know, a different kind of book needed to be written on the topic.
And I think that's what's so refreshing about this book. It's not a medical journal. It's not, you know, one of those dense, weighty tomes. It's like having a conversation with your best friend. It's like having the most nurturing of like therapy sessions. It's
with a friend or a sister.
Exactly.
That's exactly what I wanted it to be, because I didn't want it to be preachy. And in some ways, that's why it's similar to I Quit Sugar, because the title of the book, I Quit Sugar, sort of says it all. It's I Quit Sugar. I gave it a go, and then if you're interested, you could try it. And this is what worked for me. And I did all the research, and look, I went through detox issues. I went through this, and this is what I did, and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And I've done the same thing with this book. I didn't want it to be didactic, nor did I want it to be mislit, like, nor did I want it to be a self-help book, nor did I want it to be a memoir where, you know, like, you know, who's Sarah Wilson? Why are we reading about her life? You know, she's only halfway through it, you know. Has she got that much to say? So I wanted it to be a conversation.
Do you want to tell us a bit about the title? Because it's First We Make the Beast Beautiful.
It's a tricky one. I certainly haven't. Usually with everything I do, I make it quite commercially palatable. That's my background. I've been 20 years as a journalist, always working in the mainstream. But with this one, I just wanted to have a title that just could sit there as something that got people thinking, rather than sort of a flashy kind of, you know, let's sell this book kind of a thing. But it came from, it's a line from a proverb, a Chinese proverb that I came across in a book about manic depression. K. Jamison Radfield. Either way, she's a psychiatrist, a US psychiatrist who has manic depression or bipolar. And she wrote a memoir in the 90s, which I read at the time, and it helped me tremendously with understanding my own bipolar. And I just remember that phrase, you know, and I went and hunted it down while I was writing this book, and it just sat and percolated, and I just felt that that's the right title for the book. And it's this notion of going about things where you make it beautiful, and you know, you make a beast beautiful, you know, and it takes hard work. And the book is very much about vigilance, hard work, taking on responsibility for your state of mind, and that in itself is part of the healing process. But, you know, there's an octopus also on the cover. And I sort of got to develop a little bit of an understanding of octopuses. And it is octopuses, by the way.
It is not octopi.
No, it's not octopi. And the reason for that is that it's a Greek word, and you can't, and doing an I on the end is a Roman suffix, and you can't do that apparently to Greek words, so it's octopuses.
You know, I should know that since I am Greek, but...
Yeah, sorry about that one. Sorry to throw that one at you. Also, my partner at the time, while I was writing the book, he is a fisherman and he is an artist, and he actually did the print of this octopus. And so it became a bit of a motif. And I won't tell you what happens to him and I in the book, because it sort of culminates at the end, as you might know, if you've got to the end of the book. But I just felt it was really important to put this octopus on there because it is a beast. It's, you know, we parted ways on the evolutionary chain something like 600 million years ago. We are so unrelated to them. They are related to mollusks, right? And yet they have an emotional connection to humans. They have this desire to reach out. They can smell humans through their tentacles, and they've got the same number of neurons in their tentacles as we have in our gut, which is where we emote from, where a lot of our feelings come from.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's all these kind of interesting parallels.
Yeah.
And there's been quite a number of studies that have done very, very recently on this need for octopuses to reach out to humans. There's this sentient connection. And I thought, gosh, isn't that interesting? This notion that when you start to understand them all, they become far more beautiful.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm.
It's interesting. In this book, you've essentially revealed a lot about your past, everything that you're going through, that you've been through. Has it been a struggle, or has it been quite cathartic?
The writing of
the
book?
Yeah, the writing, just getting everything down on paper.
The book took 2 years to write, and then, as I say, I first gave it a crack a number of years ago, but I kind of don't count that because I had to almost let go of all of that to write it afresh. But, it was a cathartic process, but it certainly was hard.
Mm.
And it was like life took me down to the depths and the darkness, almost violently, so that I was real when I wrote the book. And it was almost comical, except that it wasn't funny, that I actually would have days that were just so bad, and I was really, really just stripped entirely bare. But it was a small comfort to know, well, okay, I'm going through this, and at least I'm alive to it. So when I write about this, it's going to be very true and honest, and I'm going to be in that moment with the reader. And you might have noticed that there's sort of a number of threads through the book, but one of them is the writing of the book. So I dip in and out about writing the book and what happened while I was writing it. And that was quite an interesting thing to do. So I'd be 4 o'clock in the morning. You know, I think there's a scene where I talk about squatting on the lounge room floor naked, going completely mad, and I just write out my anxiety attack and just sort of describe it, and, you know, so that that's in there, you know?
And that's what's going to appeal, I think, to a lot of people going through anxiety. Did you have that in mind when you were writing this book? Like, this is going to speak to someone and it's going to help someone.
Oh, it's the only reason I've written it, you know? I also have this in the book. It's quite handy that I've had all these considerations.
Yeah.
It's almost like every question I've been asked by journalists so far, I've gone through and I've answered in the book. So I'm not going, well, I cover that in the book. My good friend Rick said to me, why are you writing this book? And I quoted something from Alain de Botton for the School of Life about how when you're anxious, you go through, or if you have a mental disorder of any kind, you go through the torment alone.
Yeah.
It's a very lonely experience. But one thing we can do is reach out to others and tap them gently on the shoulder and say, I know. And that's kind of why I've written this book, because I'm sick of feeling lonely.
Yeah.
And some of the most wonderful, wonderful dialogues that are the most comforting, the biggest source of comfort for me are on my blog, where I write about these topics and people respond and they provide their comments and I learn more, and in that process I feel less lonely. So it was kind of a selfish act in a way, is to write this book because I wanted to feel less lonely. But yes, I guess that's why it came out as a conversation in some ways.
Yeah.
And I have conversations with experts, but also everyday people in forums and people on my blog, and I email people and I pick up the phone and I ring people, because it's, you know, my journey hasn't finished. You know, it's, you know, that's kind of the, you know, I hate to give it away to anyone listening, but that's the point of my book. There is no answer.
Yeah. It's also comforting to know, because you've mentioned, you know, Stephen Fry and David Beckham, who are also going through similar things. So it's comforting to know that it's not just us kind of going through this. It is, you know, soccer players and international celebrities.
Well, one of the things that I find really comforting is learning about other people who have had some of these conditions, but also learning about how it became the grist to their mill.
Yeah.
You know, Charles Darwin, Nietzsche, some of the biggest minds in human culture, you know, in our culture, you know, had manic depression, obsessive compulsive disorder, social phobia, you know, you name it. They had it, and they say they could not have done what they did without it. You know, and that was what Kay Jemison Radfield's book, An Unquiet Mind, was about back then, was sort of understanding the evolutionary purpose of these conditions.
Yeah.
And it sounds, to my understanding, and I believe this to be so, based on various studies that have been done on it, that, you know, if we take bipolar and OCD, they are evolutionary quirks that have existed in our makeup and our genetic makeup to ensure that there's a percentage of the population who grasp outwards, to reach outwards to bigger and better things, but are also hypervigilant and can keep a community safe. And so they say that shaman were often people who had OCD because they had such high standards, you know?
Well, hopefully this will take kind of the stigma out of mental illness.
I hope so, because... Yeah, I think that anxiety does not have to be considered disordered as such.
It
doesn't have to be, and that comes down to how we talk about it, how we treat it, and how we as individuals approach it, and the sense of responsibility that we take. Because even that in itself, knowing that we have a responsibility to manage our anxiety for the sake of others and for the sake of contributing something meaningful to life, you know, if we've got that in us and if we can keep our anxiety at a level which is manageable and still beautiful, then, you know, then we can actually do great stuff with it. That's a call to arms that can actually drag you out of your downward spiral, you know?
Where does happiness fit into all this? Because, you know, society is always telling us, you know, you have to be on this relentless, you know, pursuit.
Yeah, I'm sure Booktopia's warehouse shelves are filled with books with happiness in the title.
So
yeah,
10 ways.
Yeah, that's right. It's usually 10 or an odd number generally works. 27 ways or something like that. But it's a silver bullet apparently. I personally, and you know, I don't think happiness is all that much chop. You know, I look for other things in life, richness and character and a sense of purpose and sense of meaning. I think they light my fire a lot more than happiness. Happiness is like a fleeting drug hit, you know? But also I think that the search for happiness, I mean, that in itself is problematic because it's this notion that it exists out there somewhere. So we've got to go to a mall, or we've got to go to a dating app, or we've got to go somewhere, a guru, a self-help book, right? And the answer will be there, and we've just got to follow their steps. And that in itself takes us away from the very thing that we need to be doing, I believe, and that is to come inwards and to sit comfortably with what is and with who we are. And to, that's kind of, as you know, I think, you know, that's the trajectory of my book, is showing how to do that. And it's a sort of a 180 degree flip around from the way that we've been doing things for the last, I don't know, I guess it's since the self-help culture, it started, some say in the 1920s, but I think it was more 60s and then really kicked off in the 90s. The happiness stuff. So yes, that's my take on happiness.
Do you have a theory, or perhaps in your research, have you found whether there's a link between, say, mental illness and foods? You know, if
absolutely,
you know, if you eliminate sugar, is that going to help?
Yeah, where's the connection?
Anxiety? Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. I've just written a blog post about that, and at the back of the book, I promise a bunch of different things, and one of them is a blog post on anxiety and sugar. So that's up there. But If I was to sort of put it in an elevator statement, some of the best research into anxiety and where it might be stemming mm-hmm. from and what might be triggering it is stuff around gut health and mm-hmm. the microbiome mm-hmm. and the bacteria in our guts. And like I mentioned before, you know, so much of our emotional range comes from our gut yeah. and our gut health. And we're just only starting to understand that properly now. And what causes problems in the gut? Sugar. It completely deranges, the gut and causes gut yeah. dysbiosis. And so a lot of gut problems, the symptoms are anxiety and depression, of course. And so there's an incredibly strong link. And the other link is inflammation. So sugar causes inflammation, and inflammation has been linked to a whole range of mental disorders. And I know that they've done quite a lot of work on bipolar mm-hmm. and the uric acid excretement that comes from, or elevated uric acid content
yeah.
In our bodies from sugar. And when patients are taken off sugar, their bipolar symptoms drop away. So, look, a whole range yeah. of different links, all kind of at the cutting edge of where the science is, both yeah. around gut health, mental health, yeah. and diet. Yeah.
There we go.
Mm.
So, if there's one thing you want people to take away from this book, what is it?
That's a really good question. I should actually think about that one, shouldn't I?
Or perhaps three things yeah. you want them to take away. 27 things.
Do you know what's really interesting, Anastasia? I think actually my answer would be very similar to what I say when people ask me in the context of the I Quit Sugar series of books. And that would be to be kind and gentle.
Yeah. Because you do, you repeat that throughout the book.
Mm. And look, do as I say, not as I do, because I'm not very good at it myself. But like I said, it's a journey. I hate using that word. I feel as the former host of MasterChef, I absolutely shouldn't use that word. But, I don't want to use the word struggle or battle.
Yeah.
You know, it's a path that we sign up for at some point. Yeah. I don't know how it happened or when it happened, but we're on it. And so, we need to be kind and gentle, because by doing that, we have clarity, we find ways of going about things that will actually modulate our anxiety, and then we can also open ourselves, the faculties in our being that enable us to see anxiety as a beautiful thing.
Yeah. Actually, for people who think they're experiencing anxiety, what would you suggest is the first thing? I mean, after reading this book, of course.
That's right. Ordering multiple copies off Booktopia.
Yes, yeah. Of course. What's kind of, something to help them get them on this journey?
I think reading about other people's experiences is a really good start. Now, I'm leaving aside, get medical help if you're in a bad way. Absolutely. But if you're just trying to, especially anyone who's been on medication or has had different types of help over the years. So, people are on all sort of different paths with this and at different stages in the journey. But I think that if you're wanting to have a different conversation around anxiety, I think start reading about how other people have, successful people that you admire, creatives in particular, okay? And people with maybe a spiritual slant, manage or talk about their own anxiety. And that's a wonderful thing. And again, on my website, I have a list of books by people who've written about their anxiety in ways that I've found uplifting. Yeah. I've read it and gone, that is so wonderful. I'm glad I have anxiety because I can see its worth, And that exists already on my site. So if you've already
is
got...
Is this the one where it's the nine books? Nine books to heal anxiety?
That's right.
That one?
Yep. Yeah, yeah. And I think it'll be a work in progress because I'll keep reading, I'll add to it and, that kind of thing. So I think that's a really good start.
Yeah.
And to start asking yourself questions, why did I get anxious? Okay, now, but why did that happen? And then, but let's go another layer deeper and another layer and another layer.
Yeah.
And,
Excellent. Thank you so much for coming in today, Sarah.
Yeah, thank you very much.
If you're interested in First We Make the Beast Beautiful or any of Sarah's books, head on over to booktopia.com.au.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.